if you want your podcast to be longer, you better get a more comfortable chair.
I know, I need some better chairs.
This is a 45 minute podcast chair.
Are you done?
No, I had to take my, well, I can talk a little bit longer, but I had to take my wallet out because my leg was going to sleep.
Do you want some more coffee?
Kind of.
All right, let's...
Oh, ass. This chair is... Man.
I'd like to introduce my guest today, Mr. Will Hogue. I met Will in 2019 in our MRED program, Masters of Real Estate Development at Arizona State University. And it was apparent right away that we were both there to learn. We were both in places in our lives where we were doing this to benefit ourselves, not just because we had to be in school. We didn't have to be. So I think we were vibing pretty closely and resonating in the same frequency in that regard. And we became close friends and have been ever since. He's someone that'll take my call at 6 a.m. or any time of the day. Will is intelligent beyond his years. He has a sovereign spirit and a creative side that enables continued growth and success. Back in his undergrad days, Will was a student athlete and a force to be reckoned with in the pool where he collected his medals. He carried that same winning spirit into life, embracing new challenges with that same vigor he once used while racing the clock. With the recent addition of father to his ever-expanding list of titles, he's embarked on the most incredible journey of all, parenthood. Will is also a bit of a taco connoisseur. He's got an undeniable love affair with the culinary delights from south of the border. In his spare time, he likes to unwind with an IPA, a bike ride, or by watering one of his many plants. So get ready, because Will is in the house. You're in for a dynamic conversation and intelligent insights.
So, man, I do love tacos, though. Thank you.
We all love tacos.
Appreciate
I think
it.
It's something they definitely got right.
Yeah, thanks for the intro. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think it's a pleasure being on the podcast here. So thanks.
So something I want to talk about first, we talked about a little bit before, but competition. So we were in the master's program together, and we both had this hyper competitiveness about us, which I think elevated both of our performance. We were really competing against each other, but really ourselves, right? So trying to do the best that we could. And so I want to talk about a little bit about competition, your motivations for being competitive, where that came from in your life.
Yeah. So I started swimming at an early age. I mean, I was like 8 or 9, just swimming in like a country club league, which wasn't really competitive. I was just there because my friends were. And I really wasn't even that competitive at it, I don't think. I just was there because it was fun. And then fast forward through to high school. I mean, I played sports in grade school and stuff, but like I never really cared at all about winning, or I was just once again there because my friends were there. And then my freshman year, I think I told you this, but I was rookie of the meet for regionals, and I wasn't swimming club. I just swam the season, and then I think I was like, I don't know, second or something in the 50 free, and then the 100, or I placed pretty high as a freshman, and I won rookie of the meet. I'm like, dang, like this feels pretty good. Like I never knew what that felt like, winning or, you know, getting an award or recognition. And so then my sophomore year, you know, I just tried because I'm like, okay, if I did this last year, like not really trying, just participating, I feel like I have a natural skill here. I might as well try a little bit harder. And so then my sophomore year, I think it was second in the state and in the 100 and the 50. And so I'm like, damn, okay, like here we go. We're doing this thing. And so I just tried to, you know, I looked at the playing field, everybody I was swimming against, I just always wanted to win. That was just the goal, just be first. And then my junior year, I won state in the 50 freestyle, and I'm like, okay, I'm really feeling this now. And so I joined a club team, and when I joined my club team, I was like, okay, my goal is to be the best and fastest swimmer, sprinter, 50, 100, 200 freestyle. And that was my mindset. That was all I wanted to do. And so joined the club team, went to junior nationals. I think I was like 19th in the country or something like that for the 50 free. And then I wanted to swim in college. So that was my goal. And then I swam all through college. I had, I don't know what it was. You could probably look it up. 63 wins in my college career. We won nationals for our relay, anchored the relay. And that was it. Like, I just wanted to be the fastest swimmer I could be. I knew I wasn't going to be Michael Phelps, but that was my goal. Mm. And so I feel as I progressed in my life, like, my goals change. So when you say MRED, I wanted to be the fastest swimmer, then I reached that. And you were saying you get, like, depressed. I wasn't really depressed, I would say, or, like, just time was over as far as I saw it. And so then MRED comes along, or my business life, I would say my career, and I was working at a bank, didn't really like it. I was finding my way, and then MRED was another, like, the new goal after I discovered real estate. And then you come along, and we're on Synthesis 2 or Synthesis 1 together, which is great, and then Synthesis 2, and then it becomes a competition all over again. I felt like I was, like, back in the pool. I'm like, well, shit, I gotta have the best Synthesis too. And so I feel as I progress through my career, like, my goals change. Like, it was swimming, and then it's my career now is trying to beat you at Synthesis too, get a better score at the end, and then now it's career and be the best dad possible.
Mm. Did you ever set a goal that you didn't accomplish?
Yeah, I never won an individual race for championships. I won.
Was that a goal that you had in mind that you were,
yeah,
you pretty, were working towards?
Yeah, I was pretty dead set on that. In college, I was, yeah.
So how did you handle that? That's a setback. You were working towards something that didn't happen.
Yeah, it sucked. I don't know. My senior year, I wanted to go 19 in the 50 free. That was, like, my goal, my life goal. And I actually ended up, and I wanted to go 43 in the 100 free, and I ended up getting disqualified my senior year in the 100 in championships. Mm. They said I flinched the start, and so I got deked. Mm. So it was basically 4 years of trying to do something, and then I got disqualified at the final. It'd be like going to the Olympics for my level and then being disqualified in finals.
Not even getting to play.
Yeah, I didn't even get to play. I think I got like third overall or something like that. But how did I handle it, like, mentally?
Mm-hmm. How did it affect you negatively, or was it you?
I don't think it really.
You come from, your mindset comes from a much healthier place than I think mine did, as far as competition was concerned. I was always outcome focused. You know, I have a goal in mind, and I'm only focused on achieving that goal. The journey didn't matter. And if I didn't hit that goal, you know, that's a big upset, or it would affect me negatively, mentally. And it's a simple concept, really, but enjoying the journey, putting your focus on the journey and the task at hand to reach a certain goal, but not being specifically outcome focused, where if I don't achieve something specific, that is not detrimental to my life. And that's where I was focused, where I needed to step back and say, my happiness is not dependent upon whether I achieve this thing or not. It's dependent on the steps I take to achieve things.
When did you find that self-awareness?
Pretty recently,
actually. like today is, let's see, Tuesday the 24th, so it was
probably within the last several months. It's probably a concept that most people know about. You hear it, but didn't really sink in for me until recently.
So did you just rewrite all your goals?
No, the goals, I don't think the goals change. It's just my focus and attention. My happiness is not tied to the achievement. It's my happiness is tied to what I'm doing presently. I'm trying to live in the present moment and enjoy what I'm doing.
Do you set your, what's a classic goal? It's time and a reasonable objective or something like that. I think are like the two things you have to have, time and a measurable outcome. Is that how you set your goals now, or are they like more ambiguous?
Probably more ambiguous. Like I said, not tied to specific outcome, but I want to more focus on the steps to take to get there, what I'm doing on a daily basis to achieve my goals.
Yeah, and it's, we're talking. It's some days you feel like you're not getting anything done, and then some days you feel like you are. The average is hopefully just the goal. The end outcome right. is like hopefully the average.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's and there's people out there that need to hear that as well. A good analogy is Michael Phelps, Olympic swimmer, terribly depressed after he achieved everything he worked for, and so many of us are just focused on that peak, hitting that, and not happy in our day-to-day lives on what we're doing to get there. Like, this thing is going to make me happy if I achieve it, or this thing is going to make me happy if I buy it, or if I make enough money to be able to afford this house, this will finally make me happy. And that's, and like I said, you probably have lived your life in a healthier mindset of being happy with what you have currently than I think I was. But same thing goes for Imred. We both competed. We made each other better because of that.
You beat me.
Beat you once. I think you beat me the second time.
I thought you beat me in Synthesis 2. You beat me.
In Synth 3, you won.
We didn't win. We
Your team won.
Yeah, our team won. Yeah.
But we made, my point is we made each other better, but because we were so hyper-focused on winning, there was also some negativity that came out of...
Yeah. I don't know what that was all about as far as the dynamic of that class goes, but yeah, and that was probably, could be some of it. Yeah, I think it was also the fact that we included everyone, regardless. I mean, I know that there was a dynamic as far as it was a little clicky, and I don't know, I think that could have been maybe some of it too, as far as that goes, but yeah, I mean... It's interesting to see, like, when the team's put together, like you said, how people interact, like, on a team. There seems like there's always one person that is the leader. Mm-hmm. It's like the teams that don't ever have a solid leadership, like, they stink. I don't know why. They're just not good. Mm-hmm. But then is it good to have a leader that just overpowers everything, or is it good to have a bunch of followers? I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic, because then I feel like it almost, like, it just takes one person can have the ability to just take over.
Yeah, I learned a ton from that experience. I know you did as well.
Yeah, yeah. I learned that the more I realized I don't know shit. Like, I don't know anything. There's so many opportunities to learn, but I learned a lot in the program. It taught me how to be scrappy and find the answers for sure.
And looking back, the same thing we're just talking about is I enjoyed the process, the program, but I was, again, so focused on winning that I wasn't able to enjoy it at the time, but I am now. Looking back, it was a great time, and...
Yeah. I think looking back, I probably would have tried to look for a job earlier. That was, like, one thing I think I probably would have done.
Hindsight's 2020.
Well, yeah.
I always do something different looking back. But
that's what I was trying to tell the students. Like, I would look for a job, like, after orientation. Like, start looking now.
There's some, they're worried about grades, right? Like, it's a master's program. You do the work, you're going to graduate. They don't really grade anything. Worry about learning, worry about employers if that's what you're looking for, or whatever it is you're trying to do, focus on that.
Yeah, I feel like Nick McDonald did that pretty well in our class.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he had a job, like, right after. It's like one of the few.
Yeah. Seems.
But yeah, I mean, definitely taught me a lot. It's just a shift in goals and a shift in what you're competitive at. I mean, I feel like you can be competitive at anything. Mm. Like, I don't know, like, why, but maybe it's like from an upbringing. Like, my parents were always competitive, not so much with each other in, like, a fun way, but not, like, competitive for our time or competitive for attention or anything like that. But I can remember whenever we would go and we would drive separate to something. Like, say, my sister...
Oh, yeah.
You got to race home.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my sister and my mom were in one car, and my dad and I were in the other car. We would take different routes, and we would try and race. But you had to go the speed limit. Like, you couldn't not go the speed limit, otherwise you were cheating. So you can be reckless about it. But anyhow, like, we would race home, and that was always a thing. And I think it was always, like, just the competitive side of, like, my upbringing. And my mom is just fiercely competitive with everything. She didn't care what it is. She's racing you. She's racing you. She's doing whatever.
But does she enjoy it?
Yeah, she likes it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you could be just driving down the road, and I can remember she's just, oh, let's race this car next to us. But then, you know, we're just like going the same, like trying to hit the lights or whatever. Like just being silly about it. But it's not like it's, you know, cutthroat. So I don't know. I think it's just the upbringing and the way that my dad was a business owner. So he was pretty competitive. He had to be.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's like I was saying, learning, I guess, what I was focused on. Something you brought up. So the competitiveness for me growing up, it was like, that's how I got attention or love. So it was more conditional love based on how I performed.
Yeah.
The outcome was really related to receiving love, if that makes sense.
It does.
And then, when something else in life comes up, I'm working towards a goal, don't achieve that, it's related to...
It's negative, yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge, hugely negative event in your life. And that's what I had to learn was, like I said, focus on the journey, that love is not dependent on outcomes. It's, at least unconditional love is not. It's,
yeah, conditional.
Definitely is. And there'll be people out there that relate to that may not understand that's where their motivations are coming from for competition.
Has it changed your parenting style?
Understanding that?
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's all conditional?
No, mine's not.
I know.
Mine's not at all. We have a great relationship. Like, that's one thing. I think I'm doing that right, hopefully.
When you have an example of an adverse, you know, you can have the hindsight to correct it.
Yeah, do the opposite.
Yeah. So. Huh. As far as goals go, like, how do you set up your goals? Are you thinking you have, like, short-term, 5-year, 10-year, 20-year? 30 year, I mean, you're 40, so 70, you're probably, I don't even know where you're going to be, but 30 year, like, how do you set it up as far as over the time continuum?
I start with the end in sight and work backwards. Like, for example, when I was around, say, 35, I made a goal to be independently wealthy by 45, where I didn't have to work. I set short-term goals to be able to reach that, based on my finances and in line to make that happen.
And you were a realtor at 35?
No, I was in the Army at that time.
When did you become a realtor?
2017. I got out in 2017.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Got into real estate, started selling homes. And then in 2019 is when we went to the MRED program.
I didn't realize you were only selling homes for two years before that. I guess for some reason I thought you were flying helicopters like way early in your career. Like in your 20s, late 20s.
No, I joined when I was 29.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I didn't know. I guess I didn't realize that.
I was in for 8 years.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, got out in 17.
Did the military teach you anything about being competitive? I feel if you just show up and do your job, you know, it's like bureaucracy. Did that kill your...
No, I was always competitive with myself, and I wanted to be the best pilot I could be.
Sure.
There's different organizations within the military. The regular Army are going to be people that are, some of them are just getting by, others are more competitive. And then there's those special units where people are going to be high performers and highly competitive. And then there's units above that that are also highly competitive that you don't even know about. So
it's even crazier.
There's levels, definitely levels to it, but the regular... Just the regular Army, we would call it, or regular military, is just going to be full of... Just
enlisted folks.
Of whoever can get in for... They're there for different reasons, different motivations, and...
I guess you can birds of a feather flock together, and you're like...
Right.
Just gravitate towards the more competitive folks.
Or yeah, you know, and most of those that got along with the best were folks from... That had come from the special ops community that had switched over to being a pilot, or those type of people that were... higher performers.
So as far as being regimented, I feel like your time in the service was probably pretty regimented. Have you just carried that on to your civilian life as far as time management and how you operate your day? Because I feel like you're really regimented. I feel like you wake up at 4 o'clock, you go to the gym, you eat breakfast, you eat your coffee, or you drink your coffee, have your breakfast or whatever, and then you're like, boom, and then you go to bed 7. Mm-hmm. That's how perception is just reality for me, but that's my perception of you. So one, is that true? Or are you just lying to me that you're you know, extremely diligent on your time. I'm just messing with you. But, like, how do you plan out your day?
Well, it's certainly not true all the time. There's days I don't do what I'm planned on doing, or for whatever reason couldn't get to the gym, or, you know, got distracted and didn't get the work done that I wanted to do. But the discipline for me is just what I have to do to be able to get things done. I don't know about you. If I don't have tasks set up for the day ahead of time that I'm gonna do that day, I'm probably not gonna do it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
similar with you, or
yeah. I mean, I have to block out my time. Like, if I want to get anything done at work, like I use the Focus app on, or whatever it is on Microsoft Outlook, mm-hmm. and it just automatically blocks out time for you just based off of your reoccurring calendar events. And so, like, I'll have 2 hour blocks. Where, and actually I just realized this, that it fell off, my focus time did, because I started realizing, like, people were just throwing stuff on my calendar and I wasn't getting anything done. I'm like, oh my God, I have like back-to-back calls that were not even my choice. Like, they were just thrown on there. And then I'm finding that, like, it's 5 o'clock. I'm like, holy smokes. Like, I didn't get any of my actual work done where I had to produce something. And I looked back at my calendar, God, it's because my focus is gone. And so when I have it blocked out, when people use the scheduling assistant, like, they can't see what I'm doing, but it's simply just focusing. And so I use that pretty heavy. Like, I block out time to actually do stuff, and then I batch emails, so I don't look at emails throughout the day. If someone sends me an email, and, like, if someone were to get pissed that I didn't reply to their emails because I didn't read it, I'll probably have 40, 50 emails that I don't even read, and then I'll pick them up at 3 o'clock. And I'll look intermittently, but unless it says, hey, Will, I don't even look at it until, you know, much after the fact. Mm. So I'm like, to be diligent, like, I block out time. That's what I do. I mean, if I'm working on something, like, I need to get, like, the Kids in Kegs invitation. Mm. Like, Lauren wanted me to make that thing on PowerPoint. So I woke up, because Claire and Lauren usually wake up at like 6:15-ish, 6:15 to 7. So I know if I wake up at 5:15, I can have a solid hour to do whatever I need to do to get it done, because as soon as 8 o'clock hits, like, I'm just inundated with calls, or people from the East Coast or whatever are calling me for work, and I'm not gonna get anything done. That's how I do it.
I know people usually associate the military with discipline. I can't give them credit, I don't think. That's not where mine came from. I think mine came from a fact of just enough experience that if I know that if I do the right things, that I will accomplish the things that I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Not too long ago, put together kind of a, you know, our family values of a framework by which I want to live my life. And
ooh, that's cool.
So I have six things I do daily that I know if I do those six things, I'll be on the right path. So
you do them at the beginning of the day?
Well, there's 3 in the morning, 3 at night, basically.
That's cool.
Workout is one, is another one. I want to get the thoughts in my head on paper, or at least be able to think the thoughts through and get them out of my head so they're not running through my brain the whole day. Prepare is another one. So that's actually
a hard one.
It's one of the best ones, because it's don't think about, or don't make decisions when you don't have to, right? So I wake up at 4:30, I get dressed, I leave the house, and I don't have to think about anything because I've already prepared my clothes and my gym bag and everything I need. I don't have to prepare anything at that point or think. Then at night, there's read, meditate, and stretch.
See, you're extremely diligent in what you're doing. You're structured as all hell.
But I wasn't until I put that framework into place where I said, doing these things have these outcomes associated with them, which are outcomes that I want to experience in my life. So I'm going to do these things every day. And why every day? Because we're limited on time and we only have so many days left. If I miss a workout, that's one workout less I get to do in my life and work on my body.
Yeah.
If I miss.
Is that why you look so jacked?
Yeah.
I want to buy that shirt, but I don't think I'll look like that.
So are there any, maybe you haven't thought it through as formally, but are there frameworks in your life you live by that, do you have daily habits?
Yeah, I mean, I would say one habit, just the habits that I've formed, like I said earlier, is I wake up before the girls and do what, you know, I need to do, whether it's working on something outside of work or farting around the house on a project or just something that I need to get done. And then we always eat breakfast together. Like, eating together is important to Lauren. It's important to me too. But, you know, just the having the family unit. So, like, we eat breakfast together. I'm trying to think of another, like, thing we always do. We always eat dinner together. And I try not to stay late at work, but I'm always off at 5. Like, the whole goal of being the best dad is just being present, in my opinion. Like, I can remember growing up, like, my dad was home about 6:30, 6. He had to drive home and stuff. So we would always eat dinner as soon as my dad got home. I guess he was probably home more like 5:30. And we'd eat dinner at 6. But I can just remember growing up, and I want that for Claire. And so that's one of them. Dude, I have been so bad as far as working out. I was just telling Lauren that. Like, I need to get back. I was swimming every morning. Or not every morning. Every 3 days. I was swimming in the afternoon, 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes back to not being able to manage your schedule. Like, stuff would get thrown on there where I would have a meeting where it was like, I would get out of the pool at around 1, 12:45, 1, and then someone would like schedule a meeting right afterwards. So I'm like, crap, like, now I'm gonna have to buffer like 30 minutes on both sides so that I can do my own thing. And I'm making excuses right now, but like, I've just done a bad job of staying fit. I was telling Lauren yesterday, I'm like, I'm probably in the worst shape of my life right now. We haven't been hiking. Mm-hmm. We haven't really been cycling like we used to because Claire, and we're gonna get her a bike seat to get out there. But, like, we go on walks. I would say another thing we do in the morning is probably about 3 or 4 days a week we go on walks together in the morning. It's about 3.5 miles. We have a loop mm-hmm. that we do. So that's fun. But just, yeah, plug in with Lauren, see what she's up to for the day. Yeah, and I'd say that's pretty much it. I've been working from home, so we eat lunch together. Just trying to be present with Claire is one of the big things because I've noticed she just grows so fast.
Yeah.
She's 7 months old. She's going to be 8 months old here soon.
Yeah.
So I've just realized like how quickly they grow up. So I want to be as present as possible during this time.
And health for me is so important because I've had times where I was concerned about my health and that's all I could focus on. Right. Mm-hmm. There's a saying that a healthy man wants 100 things and an unhealthy man only wants one, which is to be healthy because...
Yeah.
If your body is not healthy, that's all your mind can focus on, and you can't do anything else. You can't achieve. You don't have the motivation or the will to achieve anything else. So that's one reason why I focus on it so much is because I want to be free to be able to do the things in my life and I want to be motivated to do those things.
Yeah, to be in shape to do them. Are you mm-hmm. still running?
Not as much. Found something recently. Sandbag.
Okay.
So I've been walking a lot.
Yeah.
And it's just walking. I never did a lot of walking. I've always done running, but walking is great.
It's good for
your joints, muscle imbalances, your core. So anyway, I started walking with this 40-pound sandbag. And I put it on, you know, I switch it between shoulders. Mm-hmm. When one gets tired, I switch it.
Yeah.
But it engages your core the entire time.
Oh, dang.
So it's incredible. I think it might be one of the most comprehensive, almost full body workouts you can do.
It's funny you say that, because we have a lot in common, except I walk around with a 41-pound sandbag. I'm just kidding. No, I bet that's harder than hell.
Yeah.
I mean, so you just walk around with just lugging a sandbag?
I go for an hour walk along the green belt.
Dang, with a 40-pound sandbag?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Why don't you just go get a job digging ditches or something?
I'm telling you,
I bet it's hard.
It's a full body workout besides your chest. Like, it works your legs, your shoulders, your back.
Dang.
But yeah.
I might have to start walking with a sandbag. Where did you get this sandbag? Did you make it at Home Depot?
Online. Yeah.
You got it?
On the line.
Sandbags.com?
I think it's called PolyFit, and it's made... It's got an outer bag, and then the inner bag is what you put the sand in. So if you go buy a 50-pound bag from Home Depot, and you pour it in there,
Dang.
There was some left over, so it's somewhere around 40 pounds. Maybe it's a little more.
I like the idea I don't know what you call it. I'm sure someone's got some name for it. But like when you can cheat activities by doing two of them at a time. So I haven't, so, I don't just.
Like what, the idea behind CrossFit or multi movements that work more than one muscle group.
Right? Like where I'm walking with Lauren, but I'm also carrying a 40-pound sandbag that makes me stronger instead of just walking. Like I'm connecting with Lauren on one hand, which is what I want to do, Lauren and Claire. But then I'm like working out at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm multitasking. I don't know what you call that. But this is, I guess, multitasking. But you're like, you know, whether it's, that's called something. I can't remember what it was. Craig Coppola, the founder of Lean Associates, talked to our ULI group. And he was saying that's what he does. He wants to watch this Netflix show, but he won't watch the Netflix show unless he's riding his bike.
Unless he's doing something productive.
Something productive. So yeah, I can't remember what he called it. But anyhow, I'm like, damn, that's a pretty good idea. But I never thought about that as far as a sandbag goes.
I didn't either. I just came across it because we redid our front yard and yeah. I wanted some bigger rocks for the yard. So on my walks, I started picking up these like 50-pound rocks and carrying them.
You're like, damn, this is hard.
And it was a great workout. So I said, I'm just carrying rocks around, I'm going to get a sandbag and
dang,
or I'm going to find something for the weight, and that's what I found was the sandbag.
I'm going to get a sandbag for our walks in the morning.
It's one of the best workouts.
Dang, send me that link. Can you send me that? Yeah, I got to do something because, man, I feel like crap. That's the thing that sucks. I sit in my chair. I'm pretty ergonomic in my chair, but I sit there, I'm like, after you get out of the pool, your lungs are just blown out. Like, they feel so good. You feel like a noodle. Kind of have to go, like, hot bath, cold bath. You know, like how you do the, whatever it's called, Jewish triathlon, but don't put that in it. But after you do the
cold plunge.
Yeah, and the sauna and stuff. Yeah. But, yeah, I just got to do something because I have not been, like, I tried for about, I don't know, a month or so. I was doing, like, our dynamic workout, like the warm-up, dynamic warm-up that we used to do for swimming.
Oh.
Where, like, I'd wake up in the mornings and I was doing that, and then you, like, go down, like, how do you describe it? It's, like, active motions, active stretches. So you're doing lunges and twisting, and then you're, like, going down and touching your ankle to stretch your hammies and that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm, like, I'm bored. I don't want to. I'm going to go and try and figure out this business plan. Because I'm thinking about stuff, and I'm, like, all right, I'm done with this. So if I could cheat and do it at the same time, while walking with Claire and getting stronger, like that seems like a win-win.
Well, multitasking. That's another thing I do while I'm walking is I listen to my podcasts.
So, yeah.
You know, get an extra hour of education in while I'm doing that, killing a couple birds with one stone.
You don't like birds?
But yeah, it's great. Great workout.
Yeah, I gotta do something like that. Yeah, just trying to find like the life hacks of doing what you want to do and then while doing what you need to do. It's like trying to figure that out. It's just like you see all those crazy things where there's like an elevated desk with like a bike underneath it. It's like treadmill. Like I couldn't do that. I'd be like going like this. I couldn't read anything. So it's like it's kind of the root of the gimmick is a good idea, but like those types of things are silly. But yeah, it's trying to be as productive as possible with the amount of time that you have. Like I was telling you, I feel like my time is so limited. The more I get, the busier I get, the less of my own time I have. And so it's like trying to maximize whatever I can do for that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then also not wake up at 4 a.m. and then go to bed at like midnight. I don't want to be up forever because then I just feel like crap all the time. But I mean, it's like trying to maximize the time I have. And I always thought that like when I was early in my career, I was in sales. And so I'd call somebody and then they'd never call me back. Well, it was because they didn't want to talk to me because they were busy and I served them like no purpose. So I've noticed and I always said to myself, I'm never going to not call someone back. If someone calls me, if they're selling something or whatever, like I'm going to call them back. And I've always done that. Someone calls, not so much like your car insurance is expiring, like something like that. But if someone's calling me because they need something or have a question, like I've always called them back. Or even someone like selling something. Like this engineer reached out to me and he was like, hey, I saw that you're on the Peoria Place as the developer. Like I'd love to get in with Graystar. And I didn't call him back because I was just busy and I forgot all about it until right now. But like controlling my time is so important to me now. Like, I don't, like, I should probably call them back because that would be nice for me to do. But I'm like, I don't really have 15 minutes that I want to spend with him because it serves me no purpose to get me closer to my goal. Mm-hmm. Like, I've almost become, the busier I become a little bit more selfish to my goals. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking out loud on that. Do you find that the busier you get, like, you just block stuff off? Okay, I can't do this. This is just taking too much of my time.
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah, I've been a slave to emails and to meetings. And I think the more, like, what I'm doing now, the more sovereign or free we get with our time, the less we're doing as far as meetings and and emails go, like just answering emails just because, or attending meetings just because.
Yeah, because it's not your time, it's their time.
But yeah, getting rid of that has freed up so much free time back for myself, where I can actually do things and work on things I'm interested, whereas before it was just focused on work I had to get done for this employer. Or
have you found, at least I think I know the answer to this, but I'm curious what you think, have you found that you become more creative because you have your own time, you're more free with your time?
I think that it's something I needed. I think it's something we all need. I think part of our purpose in life is to create, and that gives us fulfillment and happiness. Right, so once, like in MRED, we were being creative, we were working on these projects, and I know that's something we both really enjoyed. And then I went to work for an employer, and I was working on their projects, and I wasn't creating anything personally or really being personally creative. And once I got back into doing, that's when I started finding fulfillment again. And I think it's something everyone needs to be, find that creative thing inside them.
The outlet, yeah.
So I agree with you, and it's related to hemispheres of the brain. Men are typically left brain dominant, which...
What's that? Left brain dominant is...
It's structure,
gotcha.
Logic, mm-hmm. critical thinking. Brain dominant is more creative side, nurturing, arts, music, related to masculine and feminine, but to be a whole person, you need an equal balance of both. So a lot of times we're, as men, we're just in our left brain, we're getting stuff done, we're being logic, we're being efficient with our time, but we're lacking that creativity and that using that side of the brain that as a whole unit that helps us, you know, find that fulfillment.
Dude, it's so crazy you say that. I agree. I feel like since you have gone out on your own, just from what I've seen, you're doing really creative stuff. Like it's cool to see, like the whole llama thing, like that, the Etsy and the art, like just how you put all that stuff together. You're also like lifelong learner though, because you had to be. But I feel like since you've gone on your own, your creativity just exploded. You also have more time to think about your own stuff and to do your own mm-hmm. things. And like also with Lauren, like my wife, she was working FP&A, financial planning and analysis, for Verit, and then she worked for a fund, real estate fund, and she was very left brain, you said, is less creative, is the more logic side. Mm-hmm. So she was like all left brain. But now, since she's become a mother and she hasn't worked, like she's making all of this stuff, like art projects, and
you
she's
see her
out,
nurturing side come
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I've never really seen that in her. Like I walk out in the studio the other day and she was cutting out letters and she's made cards for people, like hand done cards for our friend's birthday. His name was Wills, and she like cuts it all out and like puts ribbon and curls the ribbon, does all this stuff. I'm like, dang, Lauren, I didn't know you were an artist like that. But it's crazy to think how other people have such an effect on which part of the brain you use or how what you're doing, because they control your time. But when you have your own free will, you can do, yeah, you have the creativity comes out.
Yeah, and lifelong learner, we all need to be that, right?
Yeah.
That's just another basic purpose in life, is we got to learn, and it doesn't just stop with high school or college or graduate school. It's not a formal education thing. It's something you have to do for yourself to become the best version of yourself that you can be. And it comes back to limit of time, right? If I don't learn something today, that's one less day that I have to learn in my lifetime.
We were talking about creativity and employment, how it seems like when you were employed, you were doing what someone else wanted you to do, and you were less creative. Same with Lauren. Like, she was doing what they wanted her to do, and she was less creative. Like, how do you think an employer, think of yourself, say you're hiring somebody? Because creativity is, it's what started all these companies in the first place. So how can a company or a person with employees, like, instill that culture while getting something done and then letting the person be creative? Like, what is that balance?
It may be as simple as that employer genuinely being interested in that individual's personal growth and achievement. Because different situations, at least situations I've been in, felt like I was just there to produce something for this person that didn't care about me in one way or another. Whereas if I had, say, an employer that actually cared about me and my interests and in developing me as a professional and a person, that would have gone a long way to helping me find that fulfillment that I was looking for.
Yeah, it should.
So someone that cares.
Conditional love versus, someone that cares.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's
about the individual and not just that I'm hiring someone to get something done for me. And I, other than that,
machine, yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. You just look at how other professionals that are out there, take the folks in our MRED. So, okay, where are they going? What are they doing? What are their employers doing for them to help them get to the next level?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Mark and Wim and those guys in Embra, they actually care. Like the creativity is encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go out to the workforce, you're like in this incubator, in Embra, you're like in an incubator, you're insulated. And then you go out to the workforce and it's, no, like, we're not going to do a ground lease. Like, all we do is stamp out industrial buildings. Like, bam, this is our buy box type of thing. So it's, I guess you have to have some,
we're in an industry too where there's huge egos, right?
Oh yeah.
And there are investors and stockholders, and whenever they're involved, humanity goes out the window. Like, it's the bottom
returns,
line. Returns and that's the bottom line, and that's what matters. And then humanity gets left out of the picture.
Yeah.
But I think you're in a unique position within the industry where your employer, I think, really does want to help you grow and want the best for you, and knows that they're going to build you up, and that someday you're going to leave and go on and do bigger and better things. They're not trying to pigeonhole you into a job to produce for them indefinitely, right?
That's a good point. There's just like being a boss and being a mentor. That's the two different things. I mean, the boss is just telling you what to do, and a mentor is cultivating you, like helping you figure it out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. Definitely it just takes somebody just giving you a shot, really. I feel like it goes back to the competition thing. If you can just prove that to other folks that you're gritty and you'll succeed, like, that's just because you won't give up. Mm. I feel like people are more apt to bring you around.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that was how I looked at it in MRED, like you and I both did. If this is my peer group, and if I'm getting jobs against these people, I feel like if I'm the best of my peer group, I'll have more chance of getting a job than they will.
Sure.
But then when you think about it, you go back to the swimming, it's, man, there's always someone faster than you. That was one thing I've learned about being in my current employer, is like, you go and you're like leveling up. If you, okay, you're in MRED, and say, yeah, great, you're the best in that class.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and work for a large employer and you go and meet those folks. Those folks graduated from Harvard. Like, those folks are like international, like they're part of a family office, or their family has a family office. It's just, you're like, oh man, these guys are good. Like, I got to be the best out of this group now.
Yeah.
And so you're like, it's like an onion. Like, as you're just going and leveling up and you're experiencing all these different cultures or these different groups,
mm-hmm.
you're like, man, these guys are dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there seems to be always someone better. So it's like, how do you cope with that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's...
Yeah, what do you compare yourself to?
Then you're just keeping up with the Joneses, or you're chasing, you know,
mm-hmm.
chasing something that's fleeting. That's what I struggle with. I'm like, man, okay, maybe I'm good. Like, I'm content.
Yeah.
Because I went to this thing in Dallas, and I'm talking to these guys, and yeah, they graduated from... One guy's a Harvard MBA, the other guy went to Yale, they went to Cornell, all of these Ivy League schools. And they're like, where did you go to school? And they all have their, like, Eton shirts, and their everything's pressed, and they look like they just walked off of Wall Street.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, I went to South Dakota State. It's the Harvard of the Dakotas. And they're like, okay. I don't know. It's just kind of, I guess I know. It's interesting, but we digress. But, yeah, it's just trying to be content. Sometimes the competition's out the window, and you just got to be content.
Yeah. You became a father recently. How has that affected you? Has anything come up that you didn't expect it would, or has it been what you expected it would be?
It is much more fulfilling than I thought it was going to be.
Did you have any expectations going in? Like, I know you wanted, I think.
I always wanted to be a dad, yeah.
Yeah, like I wasn't sure for the longest time. But
yeah,
I think as long as I've known you, I've known that you wanted
I wanted to be a family
big,
man.
Big family.
Yeah, I want a big family. I would say that being single is fun. Being a parent is satisfying. Like, my time management has gotten extremely better. People are always like, oh, your entire world is going to shift. It's going to be so different. And so I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. But then once it happens, you're like, oh, shit. Like, now I realize that maybe once I wanted a big house in PV or a nice truck or whatever, and now I want to buy a van so I can spend time with my family. Like, I'm just working for different things. Like, I'm working for, I would love to have a vacation house in Sandpoint, Idaho on the lake so that my daughter and kids can ski and we can do all that and have family time. And then we can ski in the winters. Everything seems to be more geared towards, instead of like me going fast in a car as a single person picking up chicks, now I'm like focused on, not saying I was really focused on picking up chicks, but anyhow,
yeah.
Like, having fun, now I'm focused on what can I do to better my kids' life, give them more skills and teach them how to be a lifelong learner and teach them how to like tie the boat to the dock and like all of these skills, because I just want my kid to be extremely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Say, oh yeah, you know, I can, I don't know what the hell, like, oh yeah, my dad has a pilot's license and I could fly. Oh, you had a heart attack here? I'll get this plane down. I don't know, I just want my kids to have all of these skills that my parents, you know, taught me when I was growing up. Like, I've been to 49 states before I was like even 14.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would drive the car when I was like 12 years old behind the RV when we would go into the camping grounds, and when it was just my dad and I on a trip or something, and like I could drive at 12, like it was no big deal. So when I was 16, I'm like, yeah, I know how to drive, like it's no big deal.
Mm.
And then I look at other people and other people's kids, and they're like living under a rock until they go to college, and then they go to college and just go crazy. But yeah, I just want to teach my kids how to become extremely interesting, and working hard to do that.
Would you say your parents taught you how to think, not what to think?
Yeah.
I feel like they were probably not very demanding as far as you have to think these thoughts and do these things, where they let you become your own person. If you're not free to have your own thoughts, you're not free at all. I mean,
yeah.
And but I, yeah, grew up the same.
It's similar, right?
Very similar, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't free to have my own thoughts or do my own thing, and that's what I'm trying to teach my daughter, is basically teach her how to think for herself so she can make good decisions, not what to think.
Teach a man to fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, or a woman, in this case.
Person.
Fisher person. But, yeah, that's important. It's really important. You like for you, I mean, it's probably similar. You probably have the best gauge on this as far as how you were up, you're raised, and then you have the hindsight now and you could at least do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like having that self-reflection is, that's really the key.
Mm-hmm.
First part of fixing a problem is admitting that you have one, figuring it out. How have you consciously changed your parenting style? Like, I'm sure you just stopped dead in your tracks. You'd mm-hmm. be like, okay, this is how I want to do it, not that.
Well, that's the thing. I, becoming a parent, every parenting thing I did, I compared to, mm-hmm. you know, how my parents handled the situation. And then,
yeah, sure.
And that's where a lot of anger came from, I'd say. Basically, it's through that filter of, I want her to learn how to make good decisions for herself. And you do that by gathering information, synthesizing it, and thinking of an action, and then trying that action, seeing if you get the outcome that you're trying to get. And if not, then think it through again, try something different. Looking at things from as many different perspectives as possible is one of those things I'm trying to teach her.
Instead of just going with emotion or just making a decision.
Or telling her what to do. I'm trying to get her to figure it out for herself.
I bet that's hard. I mean, you're 8 years ahead of me? 9 years ahead of me as far as kids go? How old is she?
Six.
She's six? Oh, dang. That's just eight. Anyhow, yes, you're dealing with entirely different things than I am. Like, I can't tell Claire, like, Claire, think about that.
Well, yeah, age appropriate, right?
Well, I know, but yeah, at least now, hearing what you're saying, it's like now you can gear up towards that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first years of kids' life are extremely important as far as that goes.
And obviously there's certain things like that she does where I have to be like, no, we're not doing that just because that's what you want to do. Like, I have to teach her those lessons. But when it's something that I can let her think through and make a decision on her own, that's what I'm push her towards.
So if she cracks a beer, you don't say no. You just say no, don't have six because you have to go to school in the morning and you'll feel bad.
Exactly. But the outcomes of that parenting have been positive.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, she's real good.
Yeah. I bet that's one thing that I'm excited. I'm excited to see Claire, like, blossom, really come into her own, get a sense of humor, start talking. Like, have you seen that meme? It's not a meme, it's a video where the mom says, honey, does this shirt make me look fat? And then the kid goes, mom, you are fat. Like, just like that type of stuff.
Kids are honest.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, like, I'm just excited to, I'm sure that's going to come back to bite me in the butt, but just excited for that, like, phase. Because I see it with, I mean, see with you guys, see it with my sister's kids, my nieces and nephew.
Mm-hmm.
They're hilarious. I don't know. It's just fun. I don't know what you would do being a single person with no kids. Like, I see, Laura and I were talking about that. Like, what a lonely existence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. What are you going to do when you're all old?
You might regret it then. I guess you don't miss what you don't have in the present sometimes.
But yeah.
You don't know any different.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's for me, one of the most fulfilling things was becoming a parent and then having those good experiences where I was actually scared to become a parent because I didn't want to mess up my kid based on,
yeah,
on things that were messed up with me.
Yeah, I mean, gotta figure it out. And that's what you've done a good job at.
Yeah, I saw a meme the other day. I think it said something like, heal yourself before you have kids so that your kids don't have to heal from you. Something to the effect of that, which is...
Yeah.
Because we get that programming and we act on how we're programmed. And we just... If we're not aware of that, we pass that down generation from generation and nothing changes until someone recognizes it and does something about it.
And it's just a self-awareness of the whole thing. Like, how, outside of somebody telling you, making that switch to be self-aware, like, that's...
And where does that come from?
Where does that come from? Yeah, I guess that's the question. It's not like you can just tell somebody, do you not see this? Are you crazy? And then they get all defensive. Oh, no, like, that's not me. I could never do that. Like, how do you help someone become self-aware?
I don't think you can, because it's a journey of self discovery. You have to be, you have to want it. You have to first know that a different outcome is possible, and then you have to go on that journey yourself. If you try to force it, that's where, like, you can try to force the right things on people, but by doing that, you can traumatize them, and it'll never get to them.
Yeah.
So it has to be a journey of self-discovery.
Yeah, it's wild.
But where that comes from, I don't know. I want to be the best version of myself. So I started looking, and then I started finding answers because I was looking. Like, seek and you shall find, right?
Yeah.
But most people aren't seeking. They're not finding answers if they're not looking.
What do you think is the importance or unimportance of religion in a family, regardless of the religion? Like, my parents, my family were Catholic. Like, we were never, like, told, you have to be Catholic. This is it. Like, everyone else is wrong. What do you think as far as the religion goes in family? I guess there's fanatics and everything, but I feel like religion seems to be...
I think you already said it. It comes down to the forcefulness of the demanding, you will think this and you will do this, compared to a nice framework to live your life by.
Yeah.
But your parents weren't demanding that you believed certain things, right? You were free to believe what you were going to believe and not believe.
Yeah. I guess it just comes down to the force.
Growing up, I wasn't free. I didn't have that freedom. So that, was very traumatizing to me, because I'm a sovereign person. Like, I'm my own person. I think for myself. I do what I want. But
up your own ass.
But someone like you that wasn't forced on, you can have that relationship with someone who is Catholic, who you might not believe all the dogma within the Catholic religion, but you can still have a positive relationship with your parents who are Catholic.
Yeah. It's just interesting. It always seems religion can be like the mechanism for control.
Oh, absolutely. I think religion's the commercialization of spirituality. It's what religion's great. There's tons of great things in all religions.
Teach a man to fish. There you go. That's from the Bible.
Yeah. Tons of great things, but it's not all encompassing, and it was used for power and control and manipulation, and
it is pretty crazy. Even what's going on in Israel right now. I'm like, man, it just seems, I love my religion and stuff, but geez, it just seems, regardless of what the religion is, it's always like conflict. I wonder why that is.
Because it's spirituality that's been manipulated by man to serve their purposes. It's not about, I don't think religious fanatics, let's say a religiously fanatic terrorist, it's not about, is it really about the religion, or is it about the control and the power? And
I don't know. I don't know very many of them. I'll have to ask one next time I see it, though. But yeah, I think you're right.
I think when it comes to that stuff, you gotta be the light. Let people see how you're living your life, and let them come to you and ask questions. They're curious about it, but can't force beliefs on people.
Yeah. That is so off-putting, regardless of what it is, religion or just whatever, when someone's just super in your face about stuff, whether it's politics, religion, it drives me crazy. It's like, just chill. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of people out there, regardless of what it is, just are in your face, especially with social media. I'm like, my goodness, like, I don't want to talk
divisive, about it. Right?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't think social media doesn't help at all, but it's just polarizing. But I don't know. If you want your podcast to be longer, you better get a more comfortable chair.
I know. I need some better chairs.
This is a 45-minute podcast chair.
Are you done?
No. I had to take my... Well, I can talk a little bit longer, but I had to take my wallet out because my leg was going to sleep.
Do you want some more coffee?
Kind of.
So we ended up stopping there, but overall we had a great conversation covering a wide variety of topics. I want to thank Will for agreeing to be my first guest, and hopefully he'll come back in the future.